people in the room that really are serious about importing or think that they're serious about importing, and I'll kind of give you my diabolical plan, and because I always have a motive, as I'm sure you've probably figured out by now. But we do every year for the last several years, we've been taking war room members and private clients to China. I never charged to do that, nor will I ever charge to do it, because I don't want that much responsibility, because it's a big trip. What we do that's cool, this business is really evolving. Our business is really evolving. And Ryan Rowland and I are partners in Digital Marketer and a number of other businesses. And Frank's a partner in a couple of businesses with us. This year, we decided to kind of change up the way we were doing things, because what we were doing, where the three of us were moving in sort of a pod, and we would go over and manage one of our businesses, and then we'd go over and manage another one, and then we'd go over and manage another one, sort of in a group. And it was sort of driving us crazy, because we're running multiple multi-million dollar businesses. It's hard to do. So we kind of split up our attention last year. So Ryan runs Digital Marketer, basically. That's his thing. Roland runs our events and consulting business and funnel optimization business. And I run our survival business and physical products business. I advise in the survival business. I don't run it. I advise in it, and I run the physical product side of our business. So in all of our businesses in the past, we've been very fortunate to bring together groups of syndicates or war rooms or whatever of people that the most powerful people in those particular verticals. So I hope to do that with importers, only because I know it will be a more powerful group, and we've got power in some collective bargaining, collective buying, freight, cargo forwarding, and things like that. We do multiple containers a month, and we also have air cargo contracts. And one of the gentlemen I spoke with outside is in the air cargo business that flew in from Europe to kind of hang out with us this week and talk business with us, and that's all that they do. So the more that we, there's strength in numbers in importing, right? So the more that we can buy of a thing, the cheaper that we can get it. The more stuff we can, the more things that we can share on a container, the less risk we have to take. So in other words, we might buy six things, put them on one container, and we get to test five or six markets, versus if you're by yourself, it's not efficient to do that, right? Or we may be able to negotiate air cargo contracts that are less expensive than, because everything works on volume, you know, everything works on volume. So who right now is already importing? Wow, quite a few of you guys. Right. How many of you been to China? Okay, so most of you guys are importing already. Cool. How many of you are already selling something in e-commerce, not importing, but selling enough you're thinking about importing? Okay, so most of you guys are real, which was the point of the $100, by the way. I just didn't want a bunch of snapperheads up here taking up a lot of our time. If you're a snapperhead, I'm sorry. No offense to snapperheads. I want to talk just a little bit for the people who aren't as seasoned about importing, of some of the benefits and kind of some of the rules, and then I want to talk about the trip. We will be going on a pretty extensive trip. It's a lot more, it's almost as much about networking and masterminding together on that trip as the trip itself. Because if for those of you that are seasoned importers, we are going to go to Canton Fair, to all three phases. You don't have to go to all three phases. Most seasoned importers are already past going to the fair. They don't go anymore, right? I still go because I get a lot of ideas at the fair and I meet with a number of people. Pardon? Oh, I thought somebody said. Canton Fair is, without doubt, I think the largest trade show in the world. It almost has to be. And it's crazy. You will have, your brain will just want, you'll want to, your head will want to explode after you've been there for a day. And anybody that, look, you got nods all over the place, right? It's like going, ooh, I can make money with this, and I can sell that, and I can put this with this, and I can do that. You know, I've been going over there for 16 years now. So I started going, we were talking outside with Boris, I started going over there when the Guangzhou airport was made out of concrete and painted blue and had no air conditioning, right? And now it's one of the most beautiful buildings in the world, right? So why should you import? Well, there's a lot of good reasons to import. If you're not even a physical product seller, like, I don't know, Russell, are you selling physical at all now? Yeah. Are you okay? I don't know if you were, but if you, even if you weren't, you, Russell Brunson, ladies and gentlemen, the original pimp. No, the original Iowa pimp, right? There are pimps in Iowa. There's only one. Russell's the only one. But if you're not selling physical products right now and you're in the information space, you control media. So when you have a list, the first time you drop a mail to a physical product, you are going to freak out because it's going to sell so much more than the information product you tried to sell the other day. Has that been your experience? Yeah, that has been for us. I mean, we were talking about the tripwire, the physical tripwires being so much better. To the list, to the internal list, they're even better still, right? So if you control media, you probably should be selling physical products. If you're going to sell physical products, you probably should be importing if you have the means to do so. It's not nearly as complicated as people think it is. There's a lot of ways to reduce the risk, okay? And there are risks associated to importing. I bought in 10,000 fuzzy duck puppets one time. You don't drink at trade shows. There's one lesson. So you can, one of the big benefits of importing, even though China prices are rising because of labor costs, there are other places in Asia to import from. I import from South America, Asia, and India primarily. There are a lot of reasons to import other than price. Basically, the Chinese own manufacturing. They really do. Even if their prices come up more, they'll probably still keep a pretty good chokehold on it because there's just nowhere you can get stuff done as quickly or as in as much mass as you can there. There are other regions like Taiwan, for instance. We import mass volumes of things from Taiwan. If you want to make a whole lot of something, Taiwan is much more efficient than China. Typically, and you can get a better price. If you want to import a little bit of something that's handmade, the Philippines, a lot of times, is better than China if you want a small quantity, right? If it's a hand good, like a soft good, something sewn or something crafted. India is great for metals. South America is good for things that are more tasteful, like furnishings and rattan and art and craftworks. There are different places you go, but we're going to China. So people ask me, like, how much money is it going to cost me to import? The truth is, I shouldn't tell you this because it's not good advice. The truth is, you probably could go to Canton Fair and spend $5,000 on something and get a market test, right? Now, if you're going to do that, you're probably going to want to buy something small that you can air freight in or something that you can buy a pallet or two of that you can put on the back of one of our shared containers coming in or share a container with a buddy. It doesn't have to be with my container, by the way. I don't care. Right? You share it with another guy, sit around a dinner, split a load, whatever. That's the way it works. But if you can bring in I want to be in the rubber band business right now. All right? I want to spend about $7,000 bringing in, I don't know, 7 or 8 pallets of rubber bands. So I'll be Mr. Rubber Bands, right? I'm going to be the rubber band king of the world, right? With all these wholesale rubber bands. That's only going to cost me $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 to give that a good size market test. And if it works, I'll spend $20,000 on buying a container of rubber bands and I'm in, right? You can absolutely do that. Now, the downer to that is, when I do that, I'm usually going over and buying 5 or 6 or 7 lines. 2 or 3 of them work, 3 or 4 of them don't, right? So I'm willing to take that financial risk that you guys might not be willing to take. Here, the good news is about the financial risk in China, most of the time, you can liquidate a bad buy for cost and get out of it. It's not really that risky. You know, if you can go to your competitor, and if you decide, hey, this is not working for me, just go to your competitor and sell them your inventory at your cost or 10 under cost, your direct cost, and you'll get out. So the risk is not as finite as everybody thinks it is. Well, what if I buy a container of these widgets and get stuck with them? I'm in trouble. The worst experience I ever had in China, I bought a bunch of vacuum sealers. These were commercial vacuum sealers that are used by like meat processors. I bought weird stuff. And I bought them, and I was in a hurry when I bought them. I bought a whole container of them because the price was great. And I said, you guys do 110. And the guy's like, oh, 110, 110. And I hold up the plug, and I say, you 110 plug, America. And the guy goes, oh, yeah, 110 plug, no problem. So I get them about 8 weeks later. And we plug the first one in, and it goes, poof, right? Because all the internal workings were 220, but they put a 110 plug on it. Lesson one, learn how to write a really good spec. So that's, you know, you want to write a good specification. But what happened was, so I, those things were selling in America for about $1,000. I bought them for about $200. So I had a whole load of them for $200 a piece. I lost, right? What I ended up doing, I sold the load to a South American company who could go in and rewire them and sell them with a 220 plug in South America and still make money. So I got back, I think I sold them for $190 or $180 a piece. So I lost $1,000 on the load. It's no big deal. So there's ways out, you know, a lot of people eBay off their soft inventory. That's a great way to get rid of stuff. But anyway, so how much money do you need? $5,000 on the bare bones minimum. I'd say $20,000 probably is more reasonable. You know, if you have an existing business, you already have sales volume, you know what you're selling, then I'd say infinite. You know, it's as much as you want to spend. If you know you're going to forecast out. The shipping time, you can have most, that's one of the good things about China. China's fast to manufacture. Most things can be made in about 20 days, right? And then they're now the time on the water is down to less than 20 days. So you're talking about 40 days from the time you have a confirmed order, it can be setting at LA, right? So, and being ready to go through customs. The you know, air freight, even better. Like all our credit card knives, every credit card knife we've sold so far, we brought in by air. So I order them on Monday and I get them the next Monday. So it's not nearly the cost of money and the time lag is not that bad. People ask a lot of times about payment and how orders are made. From a cash flow perspective, again, not nearly as bad as everybody thinks it is. Typically speaking, when I place an order, I place it with a 30% down payment. I pay another 30% when it's at the Chinese dock ready to ship. So I'm only 20 days away from receiving it. And I pay the balance while the shipment is on the water for release of documents. They call it a TT. So basically, they won't release the documents at the LA port for me to get my goods until the shipper says that I've paid. You understand? So I'm going to be out 2/3 of the money. I already got 60% of the money 20 days before I get the thing. So if I'm buying a $10,000 load of something, most things, oddly enough, has anybody found this, that a container of just about anything's $20,000? It's so weird. It's just a weird number. But most things, it's about $20,000 a container. It's like, what's in it? Don't matter. It's $20,000. So you're paying about $6,000 up front, about $6,000 when it's ready to ship, and you're paying about $8,000 when it releases, just a few days before it releases in LA. So that last payment, what I do online is when I make that last payment, I turn the product live. And I just put a longer lead time, like a 7-day ship time. So I start selling them the day that I make my final payment. So they're still in customs, they're still coming through. Now that's risky. You get your ass pitched doing that. I never have. But I got a load held one time for 14 days and it made me pucker up pretty good. But for the most part, it's not bad. So how can you buy? So for you guys who are totally inexperienced, I don't know. A lot of people start off, how many of you guys started buying something on Alibaba? Right? Quite a few, right? So Alibaba, TTNet, there are a number of websites that you can buy from. That's okay if you're buying a really small quantity of something. Know this, the price that you're quoted typically, the way you approach the vendor makes a huge difference with these factories. If you send a guy a message on Alibaba and say, hey, how much for these? You're going to get the total asshole price, right? Because the way they see you, the way the market sees you, you're an inexperienced buyer. You're going to lose all your money. They might as well get as much of it out of you right now as they can because somebody's going to, right? So they're going to try to hit you as hard as they can. If you send them a fax, oddly enough, a fax on letterhead will get you a better price still. A longer conversation where you ask more questions will get you a better price still. But you're only going to get so far dealing with a very low-level person who's running the Alibaba desk for whatever factory, right? The second way, and there are all kinds of ways I can help you through the Alibaba process, but and we still do buy through Alibaba, but it's we try not to, right? When you go to the show, that's the next worst thing, right? So when you're walking through Canton Fair and you walk up and go, ooh, how much are those? And you're talking to the lady who works for the lady who works for the lady that works for the dude that runs the factory. She's got a price list that is retail fundamentally, and she says this much. And if you go, wow, that's cheap, you're screwed, right? So that's not the best strategy either, right? There are certain customs when you're working the show. Like, for instance, you should always have a subordinate with you, or somebody should play the subordinate, right? And the subordinate should talk to the subordinate. The principals don't talk to the subordinates. The principals only talk to the principals. So there's certain customs that you follow to get the best possible price. You're going to get, so let's say an item for me on Alibaba is $10. And that's the best I can get out of it. If they start at $10, I can probably work them down maybe $8, $9 on Alibaba. If I go to Canton Fair, maybe I'm $6, $7, right? The real money's made when you go to the factory. So you go to the factory and you put them you basically turn around the table and you put them in an interviewing situation where they're interviewing to be your vendor, or interviewing you to be their supplier on the product, right? And you ask for their certifications, you ask for their government documentation, you ask for their turnover and their documents and their books and all this stuff. And you know what that makes you look like? Makes you look like a buyer, right? And if you look like a buyer, they're gonna treat you like a buyer. If you look like a dumbass, guess what they're gonna treat you like, right? So they'll really treat you like a buyer. Even the way you go through the show, you need a notebook, you need a stapler, right? You need to put your business cards at the top of the pad. You need to write notes under every page when you're there. You need to staple it to the top. You need to carry a certain kind of, because you know why? Because that's the way they do it. And that's the way they see chain store buyers do it. And if you behave like a chain store buyer, they will treat you like a chain store buyer. If you behave like a wholesaler, they'll treat you like a wholesaler. And you'll get elevated up the channel, right? So this is all common stuff that most of you guys already know, but I want to go over it for the people who haven't been before. Vetting the vendor, that's the next thing. The biggest mistake people make is not vetting their vendors well. There are a couple of ways to do that. A kind of a bobo way is, but I'm leaning on it more and more now because GES is so damn expensive. I use this service called Import Genius that's fantastic. It keeps up with all of the bills of lading of everything that comes into the United States. So if you want to go like on Import Genius, it's about $300 a month. And if you don't need to use it much, you can get a hold of my staff with Emil or somebody if you're going to be traveling with us, and we'll look them up for you. I don't want you to have to buy another subscription. It's maybe more than $300, maybe $600 a month. It's a lot. Does anybody else use it? Import Genius? Yeah? It's awesome, right? Yeah, because what happens is you go in and enter, like I just did one a day or two ago for Things Remembered, the engraving store, because we're in the engraving business. In 10 seconds, it showed me every shipment they brought in the last year, what factory it came from, what was on it, how much of it they bought. So I know, not only do I know where they're buying everything they're buying, I know what they're buying, and I know how much of it they're buying. And if they're buying it over and over and over again, because guess what that tells me? It's a control, it's working, they must be selling a lot of it. So I can basically tell you, I can take that data, and if I drill down enough, I can tell you what the makeup of Things Remembered corporate sales is. What their number one selling product is in the store, what their number two selling product is in the store, what their number three selling product is in the store. And the other thing that it gives me is the ability to see which vendors they're buying from. Would you think they probably do a pretty good job at vetting a vendor? Yeah. Right? Yeah. So this guy's quick right here. Yeah, they do a good job with quality control and vetting their vendors. So I don't have to pay GES $1,000 to go out. GES is a testing service. I don't have to pay GES $1,000 to go out and interview and inspect this factory and look at my loads coming out and all that, because they're probably a pretty reliable factory. Now, what you can do next in Import Genius that's really cool is you can change the center target to the vendor itself, and it'll show you everyone else in the United States that vendor's selling to. So it reverses the process. So if I find out that Things Remembered is buying from a vendor who's also selling to Saks Fifth Avenue and to Kohl's and to other major retailers, I know now that's really a qualified vendor, right? That's really a qualified vendor. So I don't have to worry about them too much. Are they going to be the cheapest vendor? Probably not, right? But it's negligible. It's not much difference when you get right down to it. Sometimes they are, though, oddly enough, and that's why they have all the business. Ordering. So once you decided you want to buy something from China, this is like the China talk in 10 minutes. Once you decided you want to buy something from China, you really need to place a formal offer. You need to do a formal request for quotation. They're going to give you one back, and then you place your order. Is the price that you put on the order the same price that you get back in the quotation? For me, it never is. I always send my order in at what I want to pay, not what they quote. And about 8 times out of 10, they will eventually accept my order, right? And most, that's just a simple way. I do two little tricks. I'll give you two little tricks for importing for those guys that do import. I ask for a quantity usually 5 to 10 times more than I'm actually going to buy. So I get that price to start with. So I get them to drop their pants all the way down. And now I work back up. I know they're going to bump me, but it's not going to be as bad as if I start with a low quantity and work the other way, right? So I'll call up a guy and go, hey, I want to buy some rubber bands. The guy says, wow, that's cool. How much you want? I think I want 100,000 pounds of rubber bands. What's your per pound price? Well, it's $2 a pound. Okay, that sounds pretty good. Well, here's an order for 10,000 pounds of rubber bands. Oh, well, you said 100,000 pounds. You know, our 10,000 pound price is, he can't, it's hard for him at that point to say, well, our 10,000 pound price is $5. So he's going to come back at $225, $250, and that's okay. I'll accept that and move on. But usually whatever he comes back at, let's say he comes back at $250, I'll probably split the difference and send him a PO at 2 1/4. And he'll bitch and moan about it a little bit, but then he'll fulfill on it most times. Not always. Sometimes he'll just say no. But it's always worth a try. That little thing saves me about $20,000 to $30,000 a month. Just that one little tactic, right? Payments, I've already talked about a third, a third, and a third. I send TT payments to Chinese factories all the time. I have yet, I think this is wood, to ever just be totally ripped off. I've never, it's the weirdest thing, because you wouldn't do it with a U.S. factory hardly. But I'll send these guys $10,000 on a first order in the hopes that eventually they'll send me something.